7% monotony and 1% complete insanity.
On that note, Mike Williams and Eileen Proctor, I want to thank you very much for joining us on Politics or Pedagogy.
John, it was an honor.
Thank you so much, sir.
This is John Krumshoff with a special Politics or Pedagogy education report. On KPFK, you hear more than a soundbite. That's education. That's our mission. Please make your contribution at 818-985-5735, or you can always pledge your support at kpfk.org. You appreciate KPFK, and we appreciate you.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Esty Chandler. As reported by The Intercept last month, as a mob attacked a pro-Palestinian student encampment at the University of California, Los Angeles, police and campus security stood by and watched the assault for nearly 5 hours before intervening. Pleas to university officials had been fruitless in stopping the attack. Daylight came. Those in the encampment cared for one another, cleaned up, and repaired. But the very next night, the police returned, not to help or apologize, but to violently and unlawfully arrest the protesters and clear the encampment. Those are the allegations of a group of students, faculty, and others who are suing the people they blame for the attack on the first night, as well as law enforcement agencies and university officials for violating their civil rights. The lawsuit filed in Los Angeles Superior Court in March came as the federal government began ramping up restrictions on speech about Palestine under the guise of eradicating anti-Semitism on college campuses. The Trump administration has been arresting and revoking the visas of students and scholars nationwide, not for crimes committed, but simply over their advocacy for Palestine, for their speech. They have also launched a Department of Justice investigation into the University of California system for allowing, quote, an anti-Semitic hostile work environment to exist on its campuses, end quote. And the Department of Justice has thrown its support behind two Jewish students who are suing UCLA for alleged campus anti-Semitism, accusing the school of trying to avoid responsibility, according to legal filings. Additionally, last month, the U.S. Department of Justice announced that a federal task force is going to investigate 10 U.S. college campuses, including USC and UCLA, under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, with a stated goal of combating anti-Semitism and investigating reported incidents since October 2023. I am very grateful to be joined today by two of the attorneys who filed the lawsuit on behalf of 32 plaintiffs attacked at the UCLA encampment last spring, seeking to hold the aggressors accountable, Mark Kleiman and Thomas B. Harvey. Thomas B. Harvey is a civil rights and criminal defense lawyer in private practice and a racial justice advocate with a long track record supporting racial justice movements as an innovative litigator who combines legal and organizing strategy to build power in Black and brown communities. Before joining Advancement Project as Justice Project Director, Thomas served as the National Director of Strategic Partnerships and Advocacy for the Bail Project and as Arch City Defender's first executive director, which he co-founded in 2009. In January 2022, the Children's Defense Fund appointed Harvey as state director of CDF California and as their national litigation strategist. Thomas B. Harvey's work has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Democracy Now!, MSNBC, and National Public Radio. And Mark Kleiman is a longtime political activist and lawyer. His practice focuses on representing whistleblowers who have discovered corporate wrongdoing, though for the last decade, he has increasingly focused on movement lawyering and human rights work, including joining the legal team that got Mutulu Shakur of the Black Liberation Army out of prison, working on prison reform and police brutality in shooting cases. For the last 8 years, he has defended professors, teachers, and activists in San Francisco, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and Los Angeles under lawfare attacks for demanding human rights and liberation for the Palestinian people. Mark Kleiman and Thomas B. Harvey have teamed up on the UCLA case, also defending Code Pink and the Palestinian youth movement, both which have been sued over last year's protest at a real estate sale event selling land in the occupied Palestinian territories. It is my great pleasure to welcome Thomas B. Harvey and Mark Kleiman to Middle East in Focus.
Thank you, Esty. I'm thrilled to be with you. I have so much regard for what I have learned from your other shows and also for the amazing job you do in educating and mobilizing the community we rely on.
That's very kind of you. Thomas, I'm going to start with you, if that's okay. The 96-page complaint that was filed identifies 20 alleged members of the group that attacked the UCLA encampment by name. It accuses university officials and police of violating the civil rights of the plaintiffs, carrying out unlawful arrests, firing less than lethal munitions at protesters at close range without just cause, as well as negligence for failing to protect students and faculty from mob violence last May. There were clearly some assailants there that night that had organized and even dressed alike. So I'm wondering, are all the individual defendants part of that group? And in regard to the individuals being sued, what are the specific accusations against them?
Well, thank you so much for having us. I want to echo Mark's kind words and thanking you for everything you do and to mobilize around this important issue. To answer your question, I think that the short answer is we don't know yet. We don't know if all 20 of them interacted. We don't know if it was a broader group of people. The 20 people we were able to identify represent a small subset of a unhinged mob, many of whom are self-proclaimed Zionists and white supremacists who ruthlessly and relentlessly attacked our clients for more than 4 hours on TV. And so far, nothing has from the state been done to hold any of them accountable in any meaningful way. So this lawsuit is an attempt to bring some accountability and some small sense of justice for the people who were attacked. I think it's very clear that a group of that 20 was working together. They made coordinated moves that resemble people who have spent some time thinking about this and plotted and made serious efforts to make their attack more effective by working with others. So I think we feel very comfortable with that. We just don't know yet. We think that there may be a broader group of people involved in this. And to, you know, come back to your introduction, I think we see now that it's not in the purpose of this lawsuit right now, but there is a broader group of people across the whole country trying to attack anyone and everyone who's standing up for Palestinians and trying to fight back against U.S. and Israeli policy about the genocide. As far as the specific individuals being sued and the accusations, though, we have many claims in the case, but, you know, the folks, the individuals we're talking about beat people with 2x4s, hit them with metal poles. So we're talking about claims of assault and battery on those folks. But I think it's, you know, a little bit less important to talk about the legal claims than what they did with spraying people with pepper spray in the eye, hitting them, beating them, firing fireworks into the crowd, burning people. It's really like an incredible amount of violence that these people imposed on many of our clients. And then the night afterwards, to have the police come and do a version of the same thing all over again.
Right. And we will get back to that part in a minute. Mark, as ABC News and others have reported, private pro-Israel groups have used facial recognition technology to identify masked protesters at Gaza solidarity encampments nationwide with the intention of identifying and reporting student protesters who are here on visas and send information to federal government agencies calling for their deportation. On the flip side, we've seen similar efforts used in the past by groups who work to identify and report individuals who committed crimes during the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. So in the latter case, the people being identified were committing crimes. And in the case of the encampment protesters, they were there exercising their First Amendment rights to speech and assembly. How does the law look at these two uses? And can we assume that some of the 20 alleged members of the attacking mob were likewise identified using facial recognition technology?
Well, first of all, you can't really separate the law from the people who enforce the law and have positions of power to make decisions about who to charge and prosecute. That's why people who beat up cops and destroyed property in the Capitol are free today, all of them, including the guy who wore the Camp Auschwitz sweatshirt. And that's also why none of the people who put nearly 20 students and faculty and community members in the hospital. These weren't just minor injuries. People were hospitalized and taken to the emergency room over this. That's why they're walking all three. There's no difference between Trump on one side and Hochman and our city attorney, Ivy Feldman Soto, on the other. It's a seamless web, in my opinion. Here's what happens with facial recognition and doxing. The technology itself, although it's alarming and frightening, is not illegal, even in private hands. What can be illegal is the way it's used or misused. So, for example, in California, there's an anti-doxing law. If you take somebody's photo and use it to get their workplace address, their home address, to threaten them, to disrupt their lives, et cetera, you're breaking the law. And we can try to get people to prosecute you, but more likely we'll just sue you ourselves if you do that sort of thing. If the information is either turned over to law enforcement to show that, hey, listen, these people assaulted us, here's the proof of it, or is used in a civil action the way Thomas and I and our colleagues are using it, that's perfectly legitimate. And frankly, there's one other use. It's important to remember that many of the people who attacked us are repeat offenders. They're the same people who've attacked other demonstrations. We need to be able to identify them, spot them in crowds so we can protect ourselves.
Very good point. You're listening to Middle East in Focus on listener-supported KPFK. I'm Esti Chandler, grateful to be joined today by two of the many justice heroes in Los Angeles who make up the impressive and dedicated legal community that fight to protect the rights of marginalized and too often attacked activists and organizations that are on the front lines of the fight for justice and equality here in the Southland. Thomas B. Harvey and Mark Kleiman. They are among the team of lawyers who have filed a lawsuit on behalf of students, faculty, and others who are suing 40 individuals who arrived with weapons and attacked them as they participated in a Gaza solidarity encampment at UCLA last spring, as well as law enforcement and campus security personnel who stood by for hours watching them being assaulted and beaten for violating their civil rights. If you are learning from or inspired by this conversation, our phone number is 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735. Or you can log on to kpfk.org to support our fiercely independent public radio station, KPFK. This is the last week of our spring fund drive. And this spring, the season of change has brought a terrifying new wave of fascism with it. There are two lanterns in our window, 250 years after Paul Revere's warning ride and the beginning of the Revolutionary War. This time, it's two if by Washington, D.C., as the Trump-Doge administration comes after all of our First Amendment rights, including press freedoms. We need your support more than ever so we can stay on the air and continue bringing you independent voices like those of our guests today, Mark Kleiman and Thomas B. Harvey. KPFK belongs to all of us. This station belongs to the community, and we need it more than ever to help us cull through the barrage of distractions and disinformation being thrown at us. to make us feel dejected and powerless. The community that is out in the streets protesting week after week is the community that has kept Middle East in Focus on the air for over 40 years and KPFK alive for 75 years. I'm asking this community to help us stay on the air at this crucial time by donating whatever you can afford. If you appreciate our programming, if you depend on our reporting, if our music and cultural shows get you through your days, please grab your phone now and make a pledge by calling 818-985-5735 or hopping online at kpfk.org. With that said, Thomas, the complaint that you and others filed reads in part, quote, "The events at UCLA highlight systemic anti-Palestinian bias and the administration's failure to uphold its obligation to protect the rights of students and faculty to engage in peaceful protest and expression." It goes on to say this action seeks to hold UCLA accountable for its failure to address and prevent Islamophobic, anti-Palestinian, and anti-Arab discrimination, its violation of civil rights of all pro-Palestinian protesters, a group comprised of a wide range of people, including Jewish people, and to demand systemic changes to ensure safety and equality of all members of the university community, end quote. You, Thomas, have been quoted in the media saying, it's really important to know UCLA did nothing to stop them on that night, about the violence that the school allowed to be meted out against those in and defending the encampment. So can you talk a bit about the different positions UCLA has taken in response to pro-Israel Jewish faculty, students, community, and donor complaints of quote-unquote, anti-Semitism, and those taken to address Islamophobic, anti-Palestinian, and anti-Arab discrimination incidents and complaints?
Sure. I think that it would be no surprise to anyone that UCLA has responded overwhelmingly to complaints about anti-Semitism and has largely ignored complaints about anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, anti-Muslim discrimination, racism. I think that you can go back to the earliest days after October 7th and see the university-wide, UC-wide, I'm not just talking about UCLA, make statements that express an enormous amount of sympathy and empathy for Israelis who were attacked and say virtually nothing about the disproportionate response by Israel or the subsequent genocidal attacks. So that set the stage for everything that we saw subsequently, including, I would say, the attacks in the encampment. If you made a chart of the statements made by UCLA officials, you would see how they emboldened the attackers who eventually attacked the encampment, because the UCLA officials regularly and routinely demeaned the people who were in the encampment and took positions against them. One other thing I think is really critical to note is that immediately following the attacks, there was an anti-Semitism task force created at UCLA and a task force on anti-Palestinian, anti-Muslim, and anti-Arab racism. UCLA has adopted the recommendations of the anti-Semitism task force and made an initiative from it, and has completely ignored the findings of the anti-Arab, anti-Muslim, and anti-Palestinian task force. And that's an astonishing illustration of the way they've treated these complaints overall. I think that another layer of that is just that the people who staff the anti-Semitism task force are largely not experts in anti-Semitism. They are people who study management and finance and real estate, whereas the other task force is filled with UCLA's own experts, and it's been ignored completely. So I think that just gets a flavor for how they've been responded to.
Understood. Mark, quickly, being a public university, it seems UCLA has at least some responsibility for the safety of their faculty, staff, and students. After all, isn't that what the federal government and Jewish students and faculty are claiming in their investigations and cases?
Oh, do I detect a suspicion of hypocrisy here? Is that possible? Of course there is. So there are a couple of pieces of this. The first is that under the law, it's real clear the university has an obligation to protect its students. It's not so clear that it has an obligation to protect anybody else, including faculty and staff, we're taking the position that they do, and we're happy to fight it out with the regents over that. The whole issue about protecting students who have been subjected to anti-Semitic something or think they have been really goes to the whole question of the difference between somebody being offended because they don't like what I say and our lead plaintiff, Thistle Brusinger, who had 8 bones in her hand broken by somebody who was yelling, hit their hands, while she was trying to hold on to a barricade. And, you know, she's a musician. She can't play her music. She has taught music. She can't teach it anymore. There's quite a difference between that and our hurting somebody's feelings with a chant.
Thomas, some plaintiffs also recalled the aggressive tactics used by police to dismantle the encampment. There were several law enforcement agencies at the encampment on the days and nights when I was there. How many and which law enforcement agencies are named in the complaint, and are any private security firms named?
No private security firms. We named LAPD, California Highway Patrol, and then, of course, UCPD is a part of the University of California. So those are the law enforcement agencies that are named in the lawsuit.
Mark, the Department of Justice investigation that I mentioned in the opening was launched under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which prohibits employment discrimination. The DOJ investigation into the UCs will assess whether the university has engaged in, quote, a pattern or practice of discrimination based on race, religion, and national origin, end quote, against professors, staff, or other employees by allowing, quote, an anti-Semitic hostile work environment to exist, end quote, on its campuses, officials said in a news release. But the allegations in the lawsuit you have filed actually points to a possible pattern of practice, as you've mentioned earlier, of discrimination based on race, religion, and national origin against professors, staff, or other employees by allowing Islamophobic, anti-Palestinian, and anti-discrimination to exist. Is that included in your case?
Only indirectly. It's included in the sense that we're going to explain to a jury and explain to the public that that racism and that Islamophobia was a motivator and a driver for everything that happened. This is not a discrimination lawsuit in that sense, though. We've got 32 plaintiffs. If we included discrimination in general in the case, we could have 3,200. And both a judge's patience and the shortness of human life requires that there be some kind of limitation and focus here. So we're going to use this to explain why anti-Palestinian and anti-Arab racism is the driving factor here. But we're not suing over that particularly. We're focused on what so far is a really unique occurrence, as Thomas described at the top of this, that coordinated 5-hour-long mob attack was one of the most violent vigilante raids on any group of people, at least since the 60s, and that nothing has happened in response to it, either by the university or by the people who have the ability to criminally charge them, is shocking. So, yes, we're taking the law into our own hands and we'll enforce it ourselves.
Well, that is what lawyers are here to do for us. And I can speak for, I believe, many, many activists here in the Southland who appreciate the work that you and Thomas and many others that you work with on this case and outside of this case are doing for the protesters who have been out there now for a year and a half and are not going to stop. So huge gratitude for your work and huge gratitude to you both for taking time to explain the case to us today. And we will obviously be following it as it moves forward.
Thanks so much. Thomas and I and the rest of the team just love the people we represent. They're just such amazing, amazing people. It's a real privilege to work with them.
As reported at Cal Matters, pro-Palestinian activism at UCLA continues. In mid-March, as the UC Board of Regents was meeting in an adjacent building, up to 100 students unfurled large banners from a second-floor courtyard denouncing the war in Gaza and calling on UC leaders to divest the system's $180 billion of investments from weapons manufacturers, companies, and assets tied to the Israeli government. The chants of the student protesters briefly halted the Regents meeting, and a police line assembled, but no arrests were made. In comments the day before, UC System Chief Investment Officer said defense companies were good investments for the system's portfolio, which exists largely to pay for retiree pensions, support the endowment, and manage short-term cash for UC campuses. The same officer, Jagdeep Singh Bashir, said last year that about $3.3 billion of UC investments are in defense firms. At that time, a total of $32 billion was invested in firms and assets with ties to Israel or weapons makers. This is the last week of KPFK's spring fund drive. And like the calendar, KPFK is also in a new season. We're beginning to see new growth and have great hope for our future. At the same time, these are likely the most politically challenging times many of us have ever known. While the weather is warming, we're seeing a heartless freeze attacking the most vulnerable members of society in a dive towards fascism most of us likely never imagined we would see in America. Please help KPFK continue doing the important programming you rely on us for by calling 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735, or log on to kpfk.org to make a donation. In these very dark times, we must use the warmth and light around us to charge our batteries and keep pushing forward. KPFK's people-powered news and analysis, music, arts, and culture programming are tools for our community to nourish our minds and spirits so we can remain strong and resilient to be of service to others in need. We ask that you please donate whatever you can afford to. If you appreciate our programming, if you depend on our independent reporting, if you depend on us having fantastic guests like Mark Kleiman and Thomas Harvey, if our music and cultural shows get you through your days, please grab your phone now to make a pledge at 818-985-5735 or online at kpfk.org to help us keep Middle East in Focus, Radio Intifada, Reggae Central, and all your favorite KPFK shows on the air. Once again, I want to thank our guests, Thomas B. Harvey and Mark Kleiman, two of the attorneys who have filed a lawsuit in L.A. Superior Court on behalf of a group of students, faculty, and others who are suing individuals, law enforcement agencies, and university officials who violated their civil rights during the Gaza Solidarity Encampment at UCLA. I also want to thank Ozzy Flamenco for his production support today. Our theme song is the overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalife. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Esti Chandler, thanking you for your continued support of KPFK and for taking this time to put the Middle East in focus.
Have you ever heard the saying, the only person's behavior I can control is my own? Well, here's your chance to exercise the power of one. Make the decision to support KPFK right now and call with your contribution. Your individual decision helps support the programs that are important to you and your community. And your contribution may just inspire someone else to contribute. Call 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. Or go to kpfk.org and pledge securely online.
Greetings. I'm Chuck Foster. Join me at 2 p.m. Sundays for Reggae Central, playing ska, rock steady, roots, dub, and dancehall. New releases, old favorites, and delightful obscurities right here on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A.
Good afternoon. I'm Nima Adelon, and welcome to Swana Region Radio. You're listening.